You have a note with you.
You have a line. I'm probably talking about.
Yeah, you have a line.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
The reason why I was wondering what the minutes he made, the cemetery sold this casework.
My inclination.
Okay, you ready to begin?
Ready.
You want to stay or you want to come up?
I'm going to sit right where I am.
All right. We'll open the code board workshop. This is our deputy city manager, Mr. James Morris, and he's going to take it away.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Good
morning.
First, board members, thank you for being board members and doing what you do. We need board members and we need people in another community, and you do an important job. All of y'all have seen the paper, and you know how much intensity and interest there is on code enforcement. You probably also know some of the difficulties that are attendant just using the code enforcement process to try and get compliance. But Glenn has become a building official. He succeeded Mike Garrett, and I was here for a short while when Mike Garrett was here. And Glenn has really jumped in, and staff working with him and Denzel. I was fortunate enough to be able to be on the selection committee when Denzel was selected to head code enforcement. So I think that with these folks, as well as folks that are seated up against the wall, you've got a strong team that's working hard. And we're working on refining things, too, because there have been things that have occurred in the past in the way that citations were issued and perhaps dismissed that shouldn't have been done that way. And we've had some discussion on that with the staff, and we're going to come back and visit it some more. What I want to talk about is things that you generally know already, but I want to just go through and clarify for a little bit. First, this is a public meeting, of course, but it's a workshop for the board. It's not a public meeting where you take questions from members of the public, but just rather have discussion among yourselves, unless you as a board decide that you want to hear questions from the public, because at the end of the day, it is your meeting, not ours, and we're here to serve you and to try and address your needs. You know you're a quasi-judicial board. And you also probably remember from civics that there are different branches of government, and the judicial part of the government is intended to take the law, consider the fact and the law, apply those to the circumstances of case, and make a conclusion. And the Florida statutes recognize that in the way that they set up code enforcement boards. So effectively, even though y'all are separate people, you are analytically one person in that you exercise your power with the majority vote that you have. But your conclusions are effectively the same as a judge to the extent that you have a process that is judicial in nature. So quasi-judicial means that it isn't purely judicial, but that it is as much like that as anything that exists in our form of government. You also know, probably from the advice of your attorney, Mr. Sino, that your evidentiary rules are not formal evidentiary rules, which is in recognition of the fact that, by and large, the process is a process of people that are non-lawyers. Board members probably are non-lawyers. People receiving citations probably are non-lawyers. Your code officers are non-lawyers, although they do have representation through Mr. Jackson and his office. So the idea is to try and have a common sense application of the facts to the law. The law is to be respected and as nearly as possible enforced as it should be. But you all sit in the middle. So Mr. Sino is your counsel, recognizing that you are not lawyers and that he's helping you to try and stay within the form the statute would require, and that is his job. Now, he and Mr. Jackson aren't opposed to each other, but Mr. Jackson sits in effectively as the prosecutor of the case. And if you want to analogize his position, he's the state attorney. Mr. Sino, and no disrespect is intended whatsoever, is effectively the judge's counsel. And judges often have clerks that work with them who are typically lawyers that help. And Mr. Sino is more advanced than that, but that is, if we take an analytical posture, that is roughly his position. And Mr. Jackson, while he's not a prosecutor of criminal laws, is roughly in the position of a prosecutor. The code officers, so this are effectively your equivalent of police officers or other witnesses that know about violations. It's their job to identify violations, cite the people to tell them what the nature of the violation is, and also give them some idea of what's a reasonable thing to do to correct the violation. And you as a board will make hearings, as you know, to determine first and foremost, is there noncompliance? The code officers are not presumptively correct. They bring citations to you, and you have a hearing to determine if, in fact, they are correct. The people that have been cited have the opportunity to contest that citation if they think that they are not in violation. So as you look at the citation, you look at the facts, you look at the testimony, and you consider the advice of the relative attorneys in the case, and also the facts as determined by the code enforcement folks. And there's where your facts come from. So you have facts that come from staff. You have a citation of the code, which is set out by the code enforcement staff, but then followed up on by the prosecutor through Mr. Jackson's office. And you, as the board, take those things into account with the advice of Mr. Cino to try and reach a conclusion. If you have found noncompliance, you probably know that there should be a reasonable opportunity to achieve compliance. And each thing, because of the nature of what it may be, a reasonable opportunity has different meaning in different cases. If it is take the trash cans off the curb, 24 hours should be enough. On the other hand, if the roof fell in, perhaps it's a two-month job. It's a relative thing. And it's your knowledge of people who've lived lives that have been business, housewives, and different things, what you know it takes to get something done, what's a reasonable opportunity to do it. So in the enforcement and conclusion of things, that is a role that the board plays, and certainly you can be revisited by people that have been cited and have been found to be in violation. And as they try to achieve compliance, those officers will help you to tell you what they think has been done, and you determine whether or not you think reasonable efforts have been made. If at the end you decide that everything that could have been done or should have been done to get compliance has been done, but there's still not compliance, there is the opportunity to impose fines and then for us to go forward and try to collect them. I'm not going to spend too much more time on this, but from the standpoint of fines, code fines are secondary to mortgages. They're secondary to taxes. So the ability to make those fines stick in often cases, depends upon what other liens there are against the property that have superiority to the one that's imposed by the code enforcement board. And that is a weakness of the system. The property appraiser's office has stepped in to be helpful in terms of using their process to attach liens to property, and that indeed is helpful. I don't think we've really seen it come into full flower yet, but that's something to work on. And then I guess in closing, I'll say that the staff and my office are dedicated to pursuing code enforcement and doing everything possible to make a place that I believe is a great place to live. I was born in Halifax. I've lived in Volusia County my entire life, and I came to this job in part because I think the physical plant that we as a county have, and the eastern part of the county in particular, it's hard to beat. Now, the window dressing that we have on top of it can stand some improvement, and I think we all know that. And that's the mission that I have. It's the mission that the people in this room here with me have. And again, your service is very much appreciated.
Let me just ask a question. There were some things that I asked to be addressed that I don't see on the agenda.
Yes,
and I just want to make sure that we have time to address some of those things. One of them was more information about condemnation and demolition. One was about foreclosures and what bank responsibilities are when the property is foreclosed on. And another is about the new building board, and there's a lot of misinformation out in the community about what that is, and it's not on the website. So if any of those can be addressed during any of your presentations, I'd really appreciate it.
I purposely pulled them from the agenda.
Okay.
They aren't relevant to the code enforcement proceedings and the code enforcement board, and that's what the workshop is for. I'll be glad to talk to you individually about any of those things. And anytime you want to call me or come by, but I wanted to stick to the subject matter. We've got a lot of personnel here, a rather limited time in terms of covering the different subject matter, and I probably have spoken too long already, but I took those off because they are not within the jurisdiction of the Code Enforcement Board or your subject matter. I'll be glad to talk to you, though, as a citizen about it.
Because I think each one of us had questions. They might not be relevant to the board per se, but I think that the concept, it's easier to understand the rulings if you know or have some inkling, not being attorneys, or that it would be easier for us to understand to make a decision if we did know the rules. And that was the whole subject, the purpose of asking questions to be addressed here. And if at a time as a group that you would, you know, that you would suggest that we could get these answers, it wouldn't have to be in a public forum.
Well, if it's a group, it has to be in public forum. Let me just stay on the subject, because the object, a part of the code enforcement process and enforceability and the fact that it maintains its legitimacy is that, in fact, you focus within the realms of the statute and that you don't consider extracurricular activities in terms of other means of enforcement or activities that may be in the community. So that as you see the statute and the citation and so on, if you take the analogy of the courtroom, which is the appropriate analogy, the object is to make sure the focus of the judge is on the criteria that the statute gives them, and not to think about, well, if I do this, there is this thing outside here that could affect that. That, and the reason that it isn't relevant is because it isn't in the statute. And the reason that I deducted it is because we want you to stay focused in the relevant subject matter and within the scope of the statute, because that's where your authority is. And when you go outside that, the process becomes suspect and perhaps subject to challenge. I'll be happy to sit down with each and every one of you for as long as you want to sit with me and answer whatever questions you may have on that subject. As citizens, I'll be glad to do that.
When I sent my letter in, I said, I suggest the goal of this workshop is to educate board members to make fair evaluations of each case and perhaps at a faster pace. And I suggested that we go over the motions that we have. Particularly want to clarify procedures that the code officers make in presenting their case, because sometimes I feel something's missing.
And that certainly is within the subject of
the case. Yes, that's the kind of things I want to address, because so many times we're up there and we're getting he said, she said. There's got to be a way of focusing what the evidence is, and that's not our fault.
No, sir. No, I don't disagree, and that's where the prosecuting attorney comes in and where your counsel comes in to help you collectively, because it's a process of interchange between the two parties at that point, the judge and the parties before the judge.
Some of the questions.
Yes, sir, and those are certainly relevant. And board members, I know that you're interested in those other things, and as citizens, you certainly have a right to the answers, and I'll be glad to sit down with you.
Okay. There's misinformation in the community, and a lot of it, by people that are on the board, that new board. I am not sure that I've seen statutes that say we can't consider condemnation, that shouldn't be part of our discussion. I'm going to be looking for real specific things.
I understand. And I will say this to you, that we have become as aggressive as we know how to be in condemnation. And if you look around, I know it's a big place. You'll see buildings going down. And it's a separate process that must be a part of a different discussion than this meeting.
Okay.
Gail, could you tell us a little bit about what the property appraiser's role is going to be with us, like how the change is going to be?
Well, I think if I would steal some words from Ouija, that would be that it's rumor and innuendo and so on. The property appraiser actually will be here tomorrow to talk about valuation. As probably all of you all know, the property appraiser is Larry Bartlett. He's an attorney. He practiced here for many years. And so his intention is to work with us to help us collect and have more enforceability in terms of the liens. But that's about the extent of the answer that I have for you in respect to. I haven't had a direct conversation with him. I've read what has been written, and it's a circumstance. So where he's come up with it, it's been done in other places, and it's very much appreciated that he would step up to help here.
Would it be appropriate when you and Tony know the information, share it with the board?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because when you read the paper, you don't know how much to believe in the paper. Thank you.
And then, you know, from the standpoint of attendees, we can publish information because of Sunshine Law and public records law, we can publish things to you collectively as a board, and anybody can receive it. And the object is that there's no closed discussion from the public, which is why we can't sit down collectively as a group. Also, you're not supposed to discuss things between the board members, as you know, which is why I'll be glad to sit down with each of you individually if you wish, and I'll bring anybody you want with me to answer those additional questions. That concludes my comments.
Thank you. Okay, so the next stage of the agenda takes us to staff presentations, and I think you're saying what I'm thinking, which is we have a lot of information we can present, but I'm not quite sure that what I'm presenting is the information you're looking for at the moment, because quite honestly, what I'm going to present to you is really the answer to your questions, which is a general overview of your responsibilities. You four, as well as every member of the board that we have right now, was at the workshop that we did in 2016, or at least they were members at that time. And I think at the time when you asked for a workshop initially, you had a new member, but at this moment you don't have a new member again. So I'm going to go through this probably, you know, looking for if you have any questions, but probably relatively quick because it's stuff that you are quite familiar with and you've been through the process now more than 20 times at a minimum. So let's take a look and let's walk ourselves through just a general overview. And there's two places we look. One is Chapter 162. That's our statutory foundation. That's what the basis of why we're able to do what we do. You're able to do what you do, and we are able to do what we do. The statutes provides for that. But in addition to that, we also have our land development code, where one of the things you'll see in the statutes that a city would adopt, and there's certain things we've adopted based upon authority in the statute. So let's look at, and I'll probably work back and forth with that. One of the things I want to remind you of, as I'm presenting as someone who's been working with code enforcement for almost 20 years, but I'm not presenting as your advisor. I think Jim tried to make that clear. I want to make sure I make it clear as well. Ms. Marshall, I'd make it clear that, you know, Charlie is the one who advises the board. He's your counsel. So I'm more someone who has opinions, and obviously the law is the law, but if there's some question of how you should apply or interpret it, ultimately you should be taking that question, you know, to your counsel and relying on your counsel's instructional information regarding that. So with that being said, let's take a quick look at some things that were highlighted out of Chapter 162, and we can do that again. You know, one of the things I think is important is to recognize in the chapter that they tell us the intent, and the intent is important. As you said, you want to feel like you're doing, I think, Mr. Harrington, you said it, that you're efficiently and effectively taking care of the things and that you're doing what you ought to be doing. Well, that's what the intent of this whole statute is, right? To promote, protect, and improve the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of the counties and municipalities of the state. And so that's what your role is. That's the purpose you're trying to accomplish. You're trying to promote, protect, improve through this statute, doing your role, your part. This is what you want to see accomplished. The statute was written to provide an equitable, expeditious, effective, and inexpensive method of enforcing any codes and ordinances. So again, there's an obligation and a consideration just from the intent of the statute alone for recognizing that you want this thing to be take to be fair, you want it to be quick, you don't want it to be excessive in any way, you just want it in compliance. I think that's what we you asked for, and it's the right thing to ask for. I kind of highlighted, you know, the applicability. You know, a magistrate shall have the same status as a code enforcement board, and we'll talk a little bit more about that by looking at how we've established the code enforcement board through our ordinance. Our ordinance is in Article 2 of the Land Development Code, 2.7. And I don't have that up there, but what that says is that In very general terms, I'll tell you, it says that the Code Enforcement Board is established according to state law, and authorized city codes and ordinances for all parties. And then there's powers and duties, and that's what y'all wanted to know about. So that's in Article 2.7, Subsection B, as far as the powers and duties of the board. And I think y'all have a handout that would reference that. But in that section, it says that under Subsection B, the powers and duties, the Code Enforcement Board should have all powers and duties set forth by state law, including the following powers and duties further set forth in Article 10, the enforcement of our Land Development Code. And so those duties, in general, conduct administrative hearings, which is what we do, concerning the alleged violations, include authority to subpoena alleged violators. We've only found the need to do that once. Subpoena alleged violators, witnesses, evidence at such hearings, and to take testimony under oath, which we do every time. You have the powers and duties to issue orders, having a force of law to command whatever steps are necessary to bring the violation into compliance. There's often discussion about what that means, the force of law. I would submit my perspective is that what it means is that you have orders that have the same powers if it was in the statutory law, that you can put those orders forth and be able to enforce them utilizing the enforcement authority that's been given to you under Chapter 162. So that when you order something to occur or to be accomplished, if it's not accomplished, then you can impose fines for them failing to do what was ordered.
We don't have the authority. In a health and safety issue, we have to ask permission of the city council to erect a safety barrier. We don't have the authority to.
I do have the authority. I would just, if you read that last statement, it says we do have the authority. Right? But however, we don't have any funds. We don't have a mechanism of money. That's why we go ahead and we would request the permission for the staff to do that, because it requires public funds to be used. But we do have the authority.
The fatal flaw in all legislation.
It says very clearly, you can enter any orders accomplished that the board has to accomplish. And it says that's the last statement in that section of duties. Very important. We do have the authority to ask, so have the money to do it. So that's the problem.
I think the balance.
But the city commission will do it for us. When have you asked the commission or the staff to do something? They said, no, we're not going to do it. Never.
Right.
No, they've never said that, but the legal aspect of something the attorney should be able to answer this is when we ask to, the obvious, a pool, been neglected, the fence is down, and nobody's been there in 6 months. So when we make the motion that the city should put up some type of safety barrier. And naturally, it's up to, I'll just say the management part of it, whether the funds are available to do it. Now, once we make that motion and somebody drowns, the scenario, somebody goes in, gets hurt. We've made the motion. Is the city more liable?
Well, I mean, I want to back up to your motion. Because I think the motion that you should have is that you can't direct the staff to do anything. You can make conclusions as it relates to a dangerous condition that needs to be addressed by securing it. And so the order to the violator is to, there's a condition that exists that's dangerous, that it needs to be secured, and the court, the Code Enforcement Board, orders that violator to secure that premise. And it's the obligation of the violator to secure the premise. From an enforcement perspective, the staff will look at whether or not that order is being carried out, and then internally and administratively may take other actions at the direction of the manager to do more if it is believed to be appropriate. The funding is a question that funds are generally found for those extreme circumstances, and so from a perspective of the authority of the board, it is to find the violation. Once the violation is found, to enter what you think is the appropriate steps to achieve compliance. The first step on the way to compliance in that circumstance would be to secure it so that it is unlikely that someone would be harmed by it. Under Florida law, the general requirement is a 4-foot fence around a pool, any pool, or screen enclosure that permits or prevents access by people. So there are means for that to be done. There are means for you to accelerate fines in the event someone isn't doing it quickly enough, and the code enforcement officers can take a look at those things to see if, in fact, your order is being followed and try to assure that public safety is protected. That's okay with that answer?
I have a thing that comes up frequently. We have slumlords who have tenants who are poor, living in conditions that a dog shouldn't live in. And they may have several of them in there, no running water, faulty electrical work, leaky roof, and they have small children. And we ask the question, are people residing in this residence? And, oh yeah, we have three tenants here. You know, it's appalling to all of us to sit on this board to know that those conditions exist, and our code inspectors and we have no way of protecting these vulnerable adults and children. And I think we have a responsibility to our community to have an avenue that that can be addressed and addressed effectively and quickly.
I don't disagree with your philosophy. The fact of it is that the statute doesn't give much in the way of help on that subject, but I will give you one example that didn't involve the there was a lady that came to City Commission, I'm going to say 6 or 8 months ago. She had rented one of those places that one of the more notorious slumlords in town had advertised, even though there was an order from the board, or I think the magistrate, not to advertise. They went on advertising. And the city attorney began injunctive proceedings, which the city has the power to do. And that allows some remedy that takes a court and takes a judge to issue that. And injunctions are an extreme remedy, a difficult remedy to get, and a time-consuming remedy. So it's not the solution in every question. But after hearing that lady's presentation at City Commission and just thinking about it overnight, the next day I spoke with the city attorney, and they shortly thereafter began injunctive actions, and maybe we'll get some correction there. The injunctive aspect, when you consider the size of the legal department, which you say, well, there's a lot of lawyers up there. There is a lot of lawyers, but there's a lot of stuff flowing, too. If you ever saw how many police we have, you could darn there's a lot of police. There's not nearly enough for everything that we're dealing with, and that's a part of the issue. I know it's not the best answer, but from a manpower and finance perspective, that's where we're at right now.
But the board is able to request that certain things be done. We don't tell. We say. We request that.
Well, yeah, and that's why I said you could order the property be secured.
Correct.
And the method of security and so on is established by the code staff as they follow up to enforce your order.
I think what you're saying, and you've done this in the past, and it's well accepted, is as we look at the single entity aspect of this
right.
board being speaking in a one voice, you're able to send a letter forward or make notification to the city staff or even to the commission if there's something of great concern of the board. Not that you have the authority to compel it, but to
right.
make it known.
So if the staff does decide to do something, I mean, even as far as or judge or injunctions, whatever you're doing, is there any way to communicate that with the board, because I think some of the frustration and misunderstanding comes from not knowing what, just the example you gave, we had no idea that the city, I had no idea, that the city issued an injunction, judge issued an injunction,
right.
and that helped to solve the problem. We didn't know that problem was being worked on. And so there's some frustration that we're not doing anything, you know,
well,
or nothing's getting done.
That particular action, it was something that there was no wait for the code enforcement action beyond what had happened already, and it was just a remedy that could be pursued. And then, like I said, it's an extraordinary remedy.
Right.
These fellows will tell you. You go to the courthouse asking for an injunction. There are a lot of tails on that question,
mm-hmm.
and you can use your legal staff full time on that if you chose to do that. so that, but it never reached a code enforcement board matter in that respect.
Right.
We'll think about the ways to provide you better answers. I know
it's almost like follow up. You know?
Dental.
In terms of the reports that the board could have, even when they're not in session, but have those communicated to them as a public record, I don't. Let's take it into consideration and move on and see if we can think them up with.
Very good. So as I talk about the duties, responsibilities of the board, code, the city code, section 2.7, also goes on in section C to talk about your membership appointment and terms, and I don't know if we really need to go over those under the context of what we're looking at right now. Unless you have a specific question about that, you can take a look, but I think it's that you're well familiar with.
I only mentioned something to Jim. The appointments section there, we don't have that same for our board.
What?
Under appointments, we don't have that. Where it talks about membership, an architect, an engineer.
It's impossible.
It's impossible.
Yeah. We don't.
Well, I'm just
saying, I think that I'm one of the
qualified,
the few board members that are qualified.
Yeah, and you're referencing the section C, C2, right?
Yeah.
And what we found as we're looking even now at the board with our shortage, it starts with who's coming forward and what you have available. And so,
well, I don't see those qualifications as meaning a heck of a lot to code.
I've been to a lot of code boards. It's desirable, but it isn't required, and very few meet those standards.
I know only one does. The Lucia County Board does, but I think other than that, I don't think anybody does in the county.
But I think Jim pointed out earlier, you see the benefit of having those various disciplines to whatever extent you do have them, to have someone that may be a builder or a contractor, or to have business people, so that you can put in context the question of how long something should take, or use your own personal knowledge as a citizen board to understand a citizen plan.
I'm saying is that you could have potential volunteers who look at this when we take out the papers and say, well, I don't qualify, so I'm not going to bother. We seem to have a hard problem getting.
One of the things is that it's statutory. So it's there because the statute says it, not because we're creating those limitations.
Right.
Now, as we go on, I said I'm going to pass on this membership. We probably, other than Anders, we're probably well familiar with what we need as far as membership. I don't know if you really feel the need to have any discussion regarding, again, these are general administrative type board functions as far as attendance or even removal. What we do know is that a chair, we elect our chair every year. The general rule is that a chair can't go two consecutive terms. However, the board in its own election can vote and allow that which they have. And there's no restriction or limitation on the consecutive terms of a vice chair. We have the role of staff that's in the statute as well. The city shall provide clerical, which we do, and professional staff liaison to the code board, shall provide for notification of board members of all meetings, which we do. Those are the notifications and notices and so forth. I think that's been done quite well. And keep the minutes and administrative support. So those are again, functions. Now, I guess when you ask the question of duties, responsibilities, and enforcement in general, then we probably want to look at, and let's take a little bit, look back at the statute, because what we're going to get into is a little bit of the minutes, and I'm looking at my watch and saying I'm out of time for my points. And if you recall before, we probably went through a portion of a review even in our prior workshop and recognize that I can go on for 2 hours to 2 days, and there's a lot to say. So I guess the general here question would be recognizing, I think y'all talked mostly of understanding that those responsibilities and also the questions you were asking. I don't know if there's anything specific regarding the duties, responsibilities of the board that you want to discuss. Looking at what we have in the statute or what we're doing through this outline, but if there's something else specific, I'm happy to speak to
that. Could you talk a little bit about the lien reviews and how it's a little bit different, the voting on the lien reviews, than we do on regular motions? Because that's a little confusion I think the board has.
Yeah, I also reference, and I don't think I made a copy for you, but in your membership packet that you received at the beginning and as part of your book, are the rules and the regulations of the board. So with all of this, the board is able to establish rules and regulations that are consistent with our code and consistent with the statute. And one of the things where the statute itself doesn't compel, but our rules do, is regarding the way we address quorum or number of votes. Quorum in general is expressed the same way. You need, we're a seven-member board, because of the population of the city, we're a seven-member board. As a seven-member board, quorum is having four people, and an affirmative vote is four votes, right? Now, when we start looking at it for lien review, it's a little different, because the statute doesn't really narrow or expand. It's four votes, because the statute doesn't really address it specifically. But in our rules and regulations, what we've done is recognize that that it requires four affirmative votes when there is a lien review. So whether you have four members present, or seven members present, you still need four affirmative votes.
As regard to a regular motion, there's four members, three of them.
Yeah, with a regular motion, all you need is a majority. As long as you have four members present, then all you need is a simple majority.
I understand that one. That's a little bit of a little confusion over the years.
That one come up. Yeah, we kind of look at each other and question again, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's something that's the product of the rules and regulations that were approved by the board, adopted by the commission. You know,
so it's not state statute; it is city law.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Tony, I don't know if this is the area to ask. One of my questions is, I'm not quite always sure. Not being personal here, but what the city is in a recommendation and how the city comes up with that recommendation to reduce a fine. Is that under this thing or with me?
Well, I'll tell you how I feel about that is sometimes I find it somewhat offensive when a city worker comes in and wants us to do a little special favor for somebody that they know or they're friends with.
That should not happen.
Well, it does. And I balk, as all of us do, because that is inappropriate and we feel that's just not right.
I no disagreement.
Now,
let me talk a little bit about the idea of lien review and perhaps reductions. From the standpoint of a recommendation, the staff could provide you a recommendation of whether or not they think it's appropriate to reduce the lien. If there's a conflict of interest because of a friendship relationship or something, that code officer should advise the people they work with and step back immediately. But I'd like to say that's what should be done in that instance.
I'm not referring to code people. We're talking about other people that work in the city.
That part of it I can't help. Don't know what to do with that.
Okay.
I think you have to take it for what it's worth. But from the perspective, or not worth, from the perspective of the idea of addressing fines and whether they stay intact or you think they ought to be reduced, that sort of thing, I think you have to look at the totality of the circumstances that you know from the beginning to the end. and was there a good faith effort, is defined to large, it's onerous in respect to the violation. There's other things, and I'm sure each of you have your own set of values to consider whether or not you think a fine should be reduced or kept intact. And from a staff perspective, I think probably what they can do is try to tell you the details of how much or how little effort was made to comply, how cooperative or not the person was, and those sorts of things. As Tony mentioned in one of his opening comments, the object of code enforcement is supposed to be compliance, not punishment. But there are instances where it seems like punishment is the only proper way to get compliance, because there's some people that just won't come along. Then you get to the collectability of it. But I think that each one is different, just as every person in this room is somewhat different from the person next to them. And it's up to the board collectively to make the determination as to what they think they should do in respect to how you can be helped to determine what you think should be done. Staff can provide you a history and a summary of what's occurred, and if you wish, I think there could be discussion about whether or not staff would recommend that the fine be left intact or adjusted to a certain number and that kind of thing. You also have instances where you've got stipulations for reduction of fine that the staff and the person with the fine agrees, and then you need to ratify those if, in fact, you decide to ratify them. Neil mentioned the idea of how much time is consumed on some things in your hearing. A stipulation helps you to get through that subject more quickly. It also should have a timeline, a very short timeline, for payment of the amount that's agreed to, and you move on with that piece of business and get on with things and move on from there.
If I can say as well to that concern, Mr. Harrington is, and I think Jim tried to remind you of that as well as I, that remember that your role is not a partner with the city. Your role is more like the judge. So the city is making a recommendation. And for whatever those purposes, that's what my job is, to present the purpose or the basis of, for why we're making the recommendation that's being made. And that's what I'm trying to do.
All I'm asking is
more
detail.
Right. And
why you made the recommendation.
Certainly.
That's all. But some of the items you mentioned, if you would go through those and say, you know, they had 60 days, they did it in 50 days, and somebody passed away during the procedure. And you do often, but often you don't. And we just jump from hearing the lien review position to a recommendation, and I just like a little more detail.
And that's well taken, but recognize too, that's where your authority lies, to be able to say, okay, I don't have enough. What else can you tell me about this?
Well, that's the reason that, you know, there's some confusion and, you know, the time element. You know, it's a board, when we get up there and you present something, you know, from the city's point of view, and if there is, I won't say disagreement, but a different thought, then this is the only forum that we have to discuss it and to come up with, you know, the appropriate action. And so, you know, it gets a little lost sometimes, but... I think that's what's needed, the discussion in the forum that we have.
Right. Well, you mean,
Tony, then. From the standpoint of your questions, I've made a couple of notes. We'll get together with the staff, talk about how that could be done to address that. We're also going to be working on the nature of the content of citations a little bit as well, so we can pick that up and try to give you information. And certainly they could reply individually back to me or to Glenn in respect to what you think, so that we can try to react. All your correspondence is public record. Do not copy other board members. You can send them directly to the staff. And we'll work to see if we can't meet some of your concerns to address that.
Well, would you put this one on your list of things?
Depends on what you say, but...
sometimes I feel, and this may not be true, but I feel like... investors come in and have swooped up all of these properties as somebody else's misfortune. And then they request that the fines be eliminated or reduced drastically because they have improved the properties.